Welcome back to another episode of the IRA Cafe podcast. My name is Jasmine, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I am super excited to bring you Carl Kroskopf from the Gold Multifamily Network, I guess. Is that how you would introduce yourself? Well, I'll let you do the honors. Why don't you tell our audience who you are and what you do?
That's perfect. I appreciate it, Jasmine. So I am also excited to be here. My you did a great job pronouncing my last name, and that is typically one of the worst things to start off with is Kroskopf, but you did great. So Carl Kroskopf, I'm the founder of Gold Multifamily. We are a group of investors up in the Pacific Northwest where we buy, operate multifamily properties, primarily the value add, right, where we're buying a Class B, Class C type properties, doing the interior renovations. We just did close on another Class A, our first Class A property earlier this year. And so took a little turn, a little diversification within the real estate portfolio itself.
So that's a really fast overview over what your company is. What do you do at the company?
Yeah, good question. So obviously as the founder, it is the wearing all of the hats, making sure all of the systems are green light. We've got a team of four employees now, and it's making sure that our employees have the proper tools, resources in order to execute their job. And then meanwhile, keeping the pipeline, keeping the assets under management, performing according to what our business plan is. Obviously, also in addition to that, right, working directly with the investors, working directly with the general and subcontractors on our value add projects. So right now, it's a lot of bit of everything, and that's it for the time being.
I love that it's a lot a bit of everything. That is all encompassing. How long have you been with the Gold Multifamily?
So I founded this a little over four years ago. Well, excuse me, let me even back up. It's been about 6 years. And so I've been full time for 4 years in running my business. Prior to that, I was a corporate strategist. I worked for a business services for a healthcare company. Worked in health tech, and that was about a 10-year career. And the last 2 years of that overlapping with building out a residential remodel and development company. Rewind to four years ago when I made that exit, it was all residential redevelopment, remodels, and quickly shifted over to the value-add multifamily when a scale was both necessary as well as interest rate shifting, inflation shifting, back in 2021, 2022, and wanted to get more so on the long horizon business plans as opposed to the short-term market-exposed products like fix and flips and ground-up developments.
What is the advantage to making that shift?
Yeah, good question. So obviously the shift in just the time horizon gives you a little bit more flexibility in executing a business plan. It gives you a little bit more flexibility in terms of what it is that you have to do in a short-term basis. And then obviously shifting from residential remodeling and development to multifamily, your valuation is based on something different, right? With traditional remodels, single family remodels, redevelopments, you're looking more so at what are your comparable, you're looking strictly at what are your comparable sales, what can you tie in emotionally for the home buyers? And so you're a little bit more whimsical in terms of what your actual end value is going to be. And so, fast forward into the multifamily space where things are valued more so based on your net operating income, right? How well does the business perform? And so, the way I look at the multifamily space is we're running micro businesses, or we're running individual businesses and multiple of them, right? Each one has their own P&L, the profit loss statement, and we have to do different, we have to pull different levers to make different properties perform better. And so again, I like that aspect. I come from business. I come from running a business. And so now it's applying those skills, that experience in the rental space.
That was actually going to be my follow-up question. Have you always been very business-minded? Did you start off that way? What did you major in college?
Good question. International business. So I majored international business for an undergrad, and I got a MBA quickly after college, after undergrad. moved right into healthcare services, business services, health tech for the 10 years, which led me into the residential space.
So did you have any mentors or any people that kind of helped you make that shift? Like, I'm trying to make the connection,
yeah,
so, you know, down the line.
So the initial connection, right, even rewinding a little bit more before, you know, I even started in the residential remodeling is, you know, we were essentially starting a family. My wife and I were starting a family. We wanted to identify new income sources. You know, she was a school counselor, had an income ceiling. I was a W-2 non-commission based employee. And, you know, I knew the amount of time that I put into the job today, I wouldn't see any fruits of those labors for another 12 to 18 months, if any at all. I was also, you know, I was an at will employee. And so I knew at any point, you know, layoffs, poor performing company could effectively do a reduction in force. So I could lose my job. So at that point, you know, we wanted a little bit more stability, a little bit more predictability. We started buying some rentals. This was now 7 years ago. 7 years ago, I started buying some rentals really slowly. It was self-education. Spent about 6 to 9 months self-educating myself in the space, how to buy, how to underwrite, how to run a small rental. And then bought several of those, amassed a small little portfolio, realized we were running out of money, started buying fix and flip, because that's the thing you do when you run out of money. Not at all. Not a great idea. Also, we had our firstborn at that exact same time that we closed a fix and flip.
Wow.
Terrible timing.
Terrible timing.
it's where I learned to love to wake up at 4 a.m. You know, just having to do everything. But anyway, you know, I think the evolution has been kind of long and predictable, right? Where you start off in the small multi or the small singles, and you start building your way, you start learning the business one step at a time. And that's where we're at now, where we're, you know, buying 30 plus unit complexes. You know, we've got the experience across the full gamut of buying, operating, selling, and trading. And now it's just putting all of those fundamentals into practice.
Gotcha. So you have at least one kid. What kind of advice, financially or business minded, would you give your kid, or do you give your kid? Like, what do you try to instill in them business wise or financial wise?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, how money works, I think, is probably one of the most important things that I like to teach her. It's, you know, you don't necessarily need to go make money. There's a lot of money out there. You just need to figure out a way to earn necessarily that money. Earning money might look like different things. I bought her a book when she was probably two. I forget the title of it, but it's something around how to become a millionaire for kids. And it teaches a lot about just simple math, simple lending practices. And so, you know, now we talk about lending money, essentially. Hey, can I borrow a dollar? I'll give you $2 in a week. And so she puts that into practice with her friends at church. And, you know, it's not like she's earning a lot of money with it, but she's understanding that, hey, I don't necessarily need to go do a bunch of chores to earn money. I can actually use money to go generate more money. It's just figuring out ways to collect that arbitrage. Obviously, arbitrage is not yet in her repertoire of vocabulary, but soon it will be.
It might be. You never know.
Yeah. She gets the concept. She gets the concept.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, A, how money works is certainly what I want to instill. And then B, you know, obviously the whole development process, the construction, you know, she knows that dad, you know, manages properties. She knows that dad builds properties, and you know, she loves that. She still wants to be a veterinarian, and I wholeheartedly support a veterinarian. My lesson that I try and teach her there too is like, hey, you don't have to necessarily become the veterinarian, especially if you don't like blood and guts and broken bones. And you know, the sad parts about being a vet, you can be a business owner of veterinarian offices. And you can hire the vets to do all the yucky work that you don't want to do. And you can go do all the fun stuff that's, you know, loving on the animals and, you know, essentially collect, you know, essentially being the risk taker, but also the money maker. And then you get to do the things about the job that you love to do, which is, you know, spending time with the animals. So she gets that concept as well.
Wow. That I never thought about it that way. Like, you know, if you want to be an astronaut, why don't you own the company that makes the rockets? Yeah. You don't have to be the astronaut, but you get all the fun stuff. Same sort
and
of
absolutely
concept.
You can certainly take that first or second or third maiden voyage on that rocket that you build, and you don't have to do all the necessary. Well, I guess you probably have to still do all the training to be an astronaut. Yeah. So yeah, I get the concept.
Right. Oh my goodness. That's cool. That's a really interesting way to look at things. I never thought of that advice. I have three kids too. So that's really good. I love that.
Yeah.
So speaking in the same sort of vein, I like to ask the same kind of questions to all of the podcast guests. So what is one piece of advice that you would give your past self? So maybe something you wish you learned when you were your daughter's age, or something you can go back and tell, say, your 18-year-old self, your 16-year-old self with your first job. Hey, look, blank. What would that be?
That's a good question. I think, you know, there's certainly a ton of things. I think reading and self-educating earlier on in my life would have been probably the best thing and hardest thing for my younger self to do. But, you know, becoming more self-educated, becoming more entrepreneurial earlier on in my life would have paid off, you know, hugely, right? I don't think the entrepreneurial spirit really started taking off and really started becoming put into practice until my late 20s. And so, you know, really that's where I would go back and say, hey, you know, learn what it means to be an entrepreneur. That really is becoming self-educating yourself, learning more about, again, how to make money, about how to help others, and then how to bridge the gap between making others and making money and helping others.
Yeah, I love that. That kind of reminds me of the quote that I really love on your website. I'm going to navigate to that really quick so I can do it verbatim. And this is under the Who We Are section and Join Our Team. And it says, while we are focused on achieving high quality outcomes for our clients, wonderful, we also show love to each other and those around us. Truly, without the love for one another, our legacy will not endure. I thought that was fantastic. So can you speak to that sort of ideal with your company?
Yeah, good. And I appreciate you bringing that up. You know, I think the overall sentiment for me relative to love. So if you look at our, you know, our core values, you know, gold, MF, so growth, obsession, love, driven, million, we want to impact 1 million families and flourish. We want our employees to flourish and become, you know, 100% of their potential. And so, you know, driving back or, you know, get backing up to the love, love value is, you know, really we want to show love to our employees, to our leadership, to our tenants, to our clients. And that is because, you know, when you think about a way that a connection is made, it's not necessarily made just monetarily, it's made emotionally. So, you know, that connection, that long lasting connection is really going to be impacted through, you know, how you present yourself to, you know, how you present yourself to others, to, again, to the tenants, the residents of those that we serve, the partners, the contractors. And, you know, it's really just framing how you approach somebody in the topic, right? You don't always have to, you know, there's a way to present a business problem or a solution in such a way that still shows respect and caring for the other party, without, you know, diminishing or demeaning or eroding any kind of self-respect. And I think that's the major thing that I want our employees to recognize. That's the main one of the main ones that I want in myself to practice. And, you know, I think that's something that obviously spills over into my personal life as well, is how we treat people, is how people will remember us.
Oh my goodness. That is like the coolest thing. And I just made the connection that your website's GOLD-MF, but that's not just gold as in the color gold, multifamily. That is the acronym for all of those core values, GOLDMF. And I just made that correlation from a marketing standpoint. That is super cool. Because when I was, you know, trying to prep for our interview and trying to get to know who you were, at least online, I was like, oh, gold MF. Do they do gold assets? Do they hold precious metals? Do they do multifamily? Are they real estate? Sure. I couldn't quite figure out what it was. But now after discussing this with you and diving a little deeper, it's GOLDMF stands for your core values of your company. Yep. Wow.
You wouldn't be the first person to ask me what the MF stood for in gold, if you didn't know any better.
Yeah.
There's many other acronyms out there that I get the joke for.
Grown up acronyms, right?
Right. Yes, we're all adults out here.
Oh no. Well, I think it's lovely. I think it's fantastic. So we talked a little bit about the past. Let's talk a little bit about the present. So what's the tie-in for my clients at American IRA who are IRA account holders? And how does that relate to your company, your business, and why are you here? Let's talk about the present. Sure.
Yeah. So we, again, value-add multifamily, turnkey multifamily are the two asset types that we buy and operate. And so I think from an IRA holder perspective, there's ways, let me even back up. So as a traditional IRA holder, you know, a lot of what we had invested in was stocks, bonds, mutual funds, et cetera. And we would always look at how do we perfectly diversify into high risk, high reward, low risk, low reward, or value stocks. And so, you know, that is the mentality that I'm taking with our real estate holding company, is also being able to create that same grid or that same matrix where, you know, investors can decide to invest. And I should even back up one more step, is we don't invest, or we don't practice with funds. We don't execute on fund strategy. We are still a single asset syndication, meaning if you're investing with gold multifamily, you're investing in a single asset, one at a time. And so there's no diversification over multiple properties. Again, what we try and do is we try and allow investors to select which offerings that they want to be part of, so that way they can diversify even still with their self-directed funds. So that way you've got, you know, your high risk, high reward, maybe ground up construction, your value add, and your turnkey, or your really, really safe, low risk, low reward type assets. And so that's the portfolio that we're trying to create and offer to both obviously cash investors as well as IRA investors.
And the assets for an IRA investor, that would, once they pick what they want to invest in, it's hands off after that. They don't have to materially be involved in the investment.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. So certainly from an IRA perspective, you definitely cannot be. You definitely cannot be involved in any way, shape, or form from an investment standpoint, from a management standpoint, just from a compliance perspective. And then obviously, the platform that we're building is the passive investing, passive income generating type investment.
Gotcha. Fantastic.
Yeah. One more thing, Jasmine, on that. One thing that we do is we enjoy getting our clients together. So I would say we're highly geographically focused right now. Right. So Washington State is where all of our assets are, where all of our investments are currently are. We'll start looking regionally outside of Washington State into the other Northwest states, right? Idaho, Utah, and Oregon at some point. But right now it's strictly in the Washington State space.
If I was an investor for pretend, do I have to be in Washington State to participate?
No. No, not at all. Certainly not. You know, obviously we've got a good portion here in the Seattle area, Texas, Florida, Tennessee, up in the Northeast as well, New Jersey. And so we've got investors all over the states. And so we try and incorporate people remotely into our town halls, right? We do quarterly town halls where we talk about our existing portfolio. And we give people an opportunity to come in and talk and, you know, voice concerns, meet other people. And, you know, again, just have an open, true and transparent open dialogue.
That's fantastic. Love to hear that too. Also, that YouTube video, you're wearing the exact same thing. Is that just your oh, branding? Yeah, it's like spot on.
I've got a wardrobe of five of the same, maybe six of the same exact shirts, and three of the same bow ties. Why? Because decision fatigue is a real thing.
Yep. It is.
So keep the decisions down. Sure. Keep the silly decisions down, so that way I can focus on the bigger. Save the brain juice, the brain fluid for the bigger decisions.
Hey, you know, I love that. That makes total sense.
Works for me.
Yep. Yeah.
It works for me. Doesn't work for everybody.
Fantastic. So I could dress as you for Halloween, because that would be very easy to do.
Yeah. I'll put those out in the Spirit Halloween, a little costume, one package costumes.
Yeah. This is the Carl Krauskopf costume.
Yep.
That's great. Okay. So we talked about the past. We talked about the present. Let's discuss the future. So what sort of trends, this could be politically, business-like, investment-like, or what sort of things do you see coming down in the pipe for the future of your business, your company, and the type of things you like to invest in?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, you know, obviously we've gone through this whole, so there's a lot of different things going on right now. It's April 2025. We just had a tariff day hit. So markets have been going volatile. We're still at a high interest rate environment right now. Treasury bills are still high. They've come down, but still banks are banking or including large spreads in their loans. So that way, you know, things still don't feel very predictable for them, the banks and credit unions, which, you know, has not yet created that super favorable lending environment for new buyers. And so, you know, you mix that with the specifically Seattle, specifically Washington. Obviously, this is starting to happen more so in other parts of the states. But, you know, we've gone through the massive supply onslaught of new units, new apartment units coming online. And we've had, you know, I would say somewhat record-breaking vacancy rates over the last, let's call it 9 months, maybe 12 months max. And things are starting to come back down. Absorption's getting more in check, meaning, you know, now new units have started slowing down, and new starts have really, really gone down substantially. I think the last report I saw this morning was something like the Seattle market is 68% new starts are down year over year, and the trend will continue to get larger and larger spreads between that. So what does that mean? What does all of this mean? And in my opinion, I think values will start to come back up. I think that we've seen a trough in terms of values, specifically from capital markets being so expensive, specifically from vacancies being so high. We've had a couple other operating expenses that have been out of control, specifically insurance. I'm sure everywhere else in the states has seen that. So, you know, you have this perfect storm of net operating income, generally speaking, going down. The cost of borrowing has gone up. And so values subsequently have either stayed flat or have gone down. So that puts us in a great buying period. For how long, I'm not exactly sure. It could likely be the next 12 to 24 months. We'll see. But ultimately, we won't see values start getting back to peak times, in my opinion, until you know, we start seeing that supply start coming back, which, you know, for Seattle, it takes roughly 3 years to get permits. And so, you know, that could put us in a period of buying for the next 2 years, and then a great peak time between year, let's say, 3 and 4, of when if you were to look at trying to time the market, which we don't generally like to do, we like to be we like to know what the market's going to be doing and what to expect. We don't try and time it. That's just hit too many people in the wrong way.
Gotcha.
We're still net buyers for the next 2 years, and we'll start looking at selling probably in 2027, maybe 2028.
So am I hearing the recap of that is it's down, but it's going to go back up? That's sort of the overall. It doesn't look great now, but it's going to look great in a little bit.
Yep, exactly.
Gotcha.
If you're a seller, it doesn't look great right now. If you're a buyer, it looks great right now.
Understood. And that's very much. Do you think that's nationwide, or do you think that's very much local? Do you think that's very much like Washington State?
I don't think it's national necessarily. I think it's trending to be more national as some of these bigger markets start phasing out of their supply glut. Right. Because, you know, we saw that happen from 2019 to 2022, 2023 is, you know, all of these, this massive wave of new supply started coming online for across the nation. And so some of these cities, some of these markets are still dealing with that onslaught of new supply. And so that's still going to be a challenge in terms of values. Why? Because their vacancies are still up. There's no sign of them going down in the immediate future. There's potential that that vacancy is still going to go up, meaning that values are going to either be held flat or going to continue in a slight downward trajectory.
Wow. Love that. You do your homework for sure. Kind of bringing this full circle, let's pretend that I'm an American IRA client and I would like to maybe investigate investing with you and your company. A, do I have to be accredited? B, what's my barrier of entry? And C, what's a good question to ask you as a prospective client?
Yeah, good question. So, Did you say it again?
I said those back-to-back questions, I know.
I love it. I love the ABC. It's great. So A, no, don't need to be an accredited. Obviously, we need a relationship before we start any kind of capital raising conversations. Right now, we are not raising capital, which is, in my opinion, as an investor, the best time to talk to an operator, a sponsor, because there's no pressure. Right. I don't have a deadline. I don't have a ticking clock that says I need X million dollars in the next 30 days. Otherwise, if I do, that really puts, in my opinion, that puts undue pressure on the sponsor to get capital in the door. And so right now, you know, this is a great time to start talking with operators and sponsors like myself, getting to know us, getting to know our practices, our communication style, the types of deals that we're doing, our past performance, et cetera. Obviously, you know, one thing, past performance does not indicate future performance, as certainly a disclaimer there. But, you know, certainly would be happy to talk through all of that. Barrier to entry certainly depends on the deal size. We've ranged from $50,000 to $100,000 minimums from an investment standpoint. And from my understanding and from my practices, that's pretty typical. I think anything below that, you really start getting, unappealing check sizes from a distribution standpoint, right? If you're investing $10,000, your distribution is going to be, something that's unexciting and maybe a dinner at Chipotle. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to change lives. We're trying to change the forecast of people's lives here. So, the last one is, I think, where to connect.
What's a really good due diligence question? So let's pretend I have $10,000 and trying to figure out where to invest it. What does that person need to know about you? What should I ask about you?
Yeah. So, you know, certainly the two safest questions are the two baseline questions are always going to be, have you lost investor capital? Have you done a capital call? Those are usually the two kisses of death, in my opinion. And both of those right now are have no insight or have no expectation of that ever happening. Generally speaking, we overraise for our deals, have a healthy reserve, even at the even if it means eroding some of the investor returns, right? I would much rather have a larger operating reserve bucket to call on in case construction goes over. We need rate caps. We need refinances. We need X, Y, or Z. would rather have that operating reserve in case things go south. And again, that essentially what that means is that we're eroding some of the returns because it's not necessarily working capital. Those are certainly two questions that I would always ask a sponsor when I invest with them. And then ultimately it's like, where are you trying to go? What's the end goal for you? So that way I know, hey, where on this journey are you? Are you at the end of the journey? Meaning, am I going to get, one, maybe two turns transactions with you? Or are you at the beginning of your journey, your investment, your business? And is this going to be a long ride? And so, for us, this is the beginning of our journey. We're 4 years in, and I certainly see another decade plus of working in the multifamily space.
How long is my investment tied up with you and your company if I do choose to invest with you?
Sure. So it certainly depends on the business plan. We always stress test the business plan, and here's base case, here's worst case scenario. Right now we're still operating in the 3 to 5 year time space. We may have one deal that bleeds over into a seven year deal, which is fine. We always like to, we pan out what's the best case, what's the worst case, and we get our debt, our long-term debt based on our worst case scenario. So that deal, we have 7 year debt, no issues there from a financing standpoint. And, obviously we'll try and sell it or refinance it before then.
Got it. Understood. Finally, maybe last but not least, what's the best way for someone to reach you, to contact you?
Yeah. If by the grace of God, you can learn how to spell, you can figure out how to spell my last name, you can find me on LinkedIn. Gold Multifamily may also be an easier connection. I'm on LinkedIn. Both of those, I do daily content on macroeconomy, local economy, regional economy, as well as what's trading what's trading. And so, we obviously we have deeper dives from a newsletter standpoint. You can sign up on our website, gold-mf.com. You can sign up to get weekly newsletters. That's where we put out our deals, our investment offerings, as well as, again, a little bit deeper dive in terms of our offerings, or excuse me, in terms of the economy. Those are the two best places. If you're looking to get engaged, if you're looking to speak with somebody who's a market expert up in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, based out of Seattle, Washington, and if you're looking to get some exposure up here, one last mention, we didn't really talk about Seattle and why Seattle specifically. A lot of investors are flocking and focus more so on Southeast and other parts of the states. The reason why I am a big believer in the Northwest, specifically Seattle, is simply from a, I would say most prominently because of the employee base. So who are the employees here? They're primarily tech driven. They're primarily Microsoft, Amazon, and one of these other, Fortune 500 tech companies. Now, obviously, in the marketplace right now, in the stock markets, their stocks are going down, so their personal net worth is being hit. However, you look at the primary drivers of innovation right now, cloud compute, you look at e-commerce, you look at artificial intelligence, some of the big buzzwords in tech right now, the vast majority of market share is being held by between Amazon and Microsoft. Obviously, you've got other Fortune 500s, other FAANG companies like Facebook or, Meta, Netflix, and some of the others that are part of that Mag 7. That's the new group, the Magnificent 7. They all of them have presence here in the Northwest. It's just Amazon and Microsoft that have their primary headquarters here. So we don't see the market going down up here regionally. We don't see it being hit. We don't see these employers going anywhere anytime soon. We see them doubling down. Yes, there are restrictions. Yes, there are difficulties in regulations around renting properties, but that makes my job hard. That does not make your returns bad. That makes your returns good because we have predictability. That just makes my job as the manager, as the operator, a little bit more difficult. And that's okay.
Yeah. Wow, fantastic. Well, thank you, Carl. Thanks for being here. Anything we didn't touch on that you want to make apparent to the audience before we sign off?
No, I think that's been great. This has been super. I've loved working with the American IRA. I think it's been a really, really great opportunity. A lot of my clients are super excited, super happy with you guys. I won't say who they came from, but had three clients shifted over to your group recently within the last month, and they are just thrilled to make that shift. So I'm happy working with you guys. It's been really, really great. I look forward to continue working with you, working with your clients, and super excited. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that ringing endorsement. We really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to speak with you finally. I've really enjoyed our discussion today. So hopefully some of the clients or prospective clients will reach out to you about your investments. But thank you so much, Carl. I appreciate you being here.
Likewise. Thanks, Jasmine. I appreciate you.
And now it's time for the IRA Cafe Q&A, where we answer a listener's questions live on the podcast. So today's question is kind of a general. We get this question a lot at American IRA. What is a checkbook control LLC? And I'm actually going to turn our eyes and turn your attention to one of our sister companies called Turnkey IRA. You can find them at turnkeyira.com. This is your source for all things checkbook control LLC. There are blog articles, how-tos, what are they, frequently asked questions. Anything you could ever want to know about checkbook control LLCs is all there at turnkeyira.com. You can also request a free consultation to have a 15-minute call with a business development person who would explain it to you, your options with checkbook control and checkbook control LLCs. This is a hot topic. We get a lot of questions about this, and you can find all of your answers at turnkeyira.com.
American IRA LLC, a North Carolina LLC, acts as a third-party administrator for New Vision Trust Company, a state-chartered South Dakota trust company. As a neutral self-directed IRA administrator, American IRA does not recommend or endorse any investments, individuals, or entities, including financial representatives, promoters, or companies. American IRA and the IRA Cafe are not responsible for other statements, representations, or agreements, nor do we evaluate the quality or profitability of any investment. American IRA does not endorse guests on the IRA Cafe podcast. Guest opinions are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of American IRA, its subsidiaries, associates, or custodian. Participation in the podcast is voluntary and no compensation is provided. American IRA is not a fiduciary and cannot offer financial advice. Please consult your CPA or another professional before making financial decisions.